It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, here on the station, and you can call with your local numbers, too, at 247-728-2353-4674 in Onslow County, and Cecil Harvell is in the studio with us this morning. Morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
We're doing okay.
Good.
Last week, we were talking about wills and deeds.
Well, we were. Ben, last week, Wes and I discussed kind of the advantages and disadvantages, some of the pitfalls, if you will, that we find our clients dealing with in terms of do we deed our property or do we leave it in our last will and testament? Mm-hmm. What are the differences? What are the distinctions? And, Ben, so many times that that concept of deeding our property while we're living, which we lawyers call an inter vivos deed, evolves in and around the goal, the objective of a family thinking that that's the way to protect the property from any kind of long-term care, nursing home expense, or anything of that nature.
Right, right. The old look-back period that we talk about often.
Correct. Yeah. And so, really, Wes and I last week discussed that we were going to revisit the issue of asset protection planning, demystify it. What is it? How does it work? Where does it begin? Who is a candidate for it? And so I think today, the time that we have today and then again into next week, we will go ahead into this subject matter. And, of course, I welcome listeners to call if they have any questions about this. But, Ben, asset protection planning is interesting. I think that those of us that do this work think of it as kind of reverse estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you plan your estate. Asset protection planning is a little bit like, you know, unplanning it in a way.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that basically you need to posture the assets that you have, both real property as well as liquid assets, in such a manner so that they are not subject to, you know, those final twists and turns of living. We have so many clients, so many children of clients who tell us that mom and dad were doing fine. They lived out a wonderful retirement. And then in the last 3 or 4 years of their life, they bled through all of their assets as
right,
a result
right.
of long-term care,
mm-hmm.
which in today's world, you know, is anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people are able to withstand that kind of financial burden or that kind of hit against their liquid assets and even their real property assets.
So with that in mind, we have to look at what our asset planning can be, not only for building them up, obviously, but for distributing the way we want them to be distributed. And the government is usually not part of that desire.
That's right. Ben, usually this begins by interviewing the client, talking with the family about the nature of their assets. And we interview relative to all of the real property assets, which, again, are land and houses, condominiums, any kind of interest, timeshare, any kind of interest in a land investment or a real property investment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we interview relative to the liquidity of the estate, you know, the stocks, the bonds, the CDs, the IRAs. We do need to separate out in our analysis the tax-deferred investments such as an IRA or a 401k versus an after-tax investment, like, for instance, just a savings account or a CD or a stock,
mm-hmm.
something of that nature that's been paid for by after-tax dollars. And then after we have all of this information, the first level of planning, of course, involves usually setting up a trust and transferring the real property, the land assets, into that trust. The way that we explain this, Ben, is that a trust is a separate and distinct, creation
yeah.
instrument than we as an individual. You know, if Ben Ball owns property individually, then of course, it's in your individual name. But if you create the Ben Ball Trust and you deed your property, you actually deed your property into the trust, then Ben, now the trust owns the property.
Right.
The title to the trust is going to be distinct and different.
Okay. Well, we have a caller with a question.
Sure.
Let's interrupt that before that thought for this moment to talk to Mark in Maury City. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Let's say you had four children mm-hmm. that inherited land from their parents several years ago. One of the one or more of the children becomes, and all of the property is held by those four children, and one of the four children becomes incapacitated, has to go into a rest home or something like
sure.
that.
Right.
What kind of, I guess what I'm saying is can the rest home or the medical provider or whomever go after or can they go after the land, I guess?
The entire property.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Well, the answer is that they can. The way that this works is that usually to qualify for some sort of assistance, the land at that point is put kind of on the back burner, is the way I like to think of it or explain mm-hmm. it. It doesn't at that point, Ben, disqualify mm-hmm. the person. The problem is that it's on the back burner and it gets moved up to the very front burner mm-hmm. when and if they die. And there is then a lien against their respective interest in the property.
Their interest in the
property.
Their
interest in the property, absolutely.
So if all four were holding the say, like a family LLC, or they were
yeah.
holding it as a single entity, and they,
right.
they hadn't parceled the property out,
right.
then that their interest in that whole pond would be at risk. That person's interest.
That's correct,
okay.
although we can't...
So one-fourth of it would be... Say if the value of it was $100,000, the lien could go against the $25,000, could go up to $25,000, don't you say?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. They're not going to be able to lien more than the interest that the qualified person had. What happens here is that once they qualify for Medicaid or any other kind of government assistance, the bottom line at that point is that there's a record kept by the Department of Medical Assistance as to the amounts of monies that are used on their behalf. And then the Department of Medical Assistance looks to the estate to see whether or not there are any assets in the estate. And, of course, this 25% interest would be included in the estate of the person because it is something that they own at the time of their death. What we want to do is to change that very fact right there, and we want so that when the Department of Medical Assistance looks into the estate, they do not find that 25% is there. If it is in a trust, then it isn't there. It is in the name of the trust, and of course that is the basics of some of the planning that we did.
Okay, Mark, it sounds like some other further questions could be asked and answered with a good estate attorney.
Did your relative already inherit the 25%?
Yes.
So that has already occurred?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, yeah. And is he competent to execute documents at this point?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's a good thing. And just to say that if for some reason he were not competent, Ben, this interplays back into the power of attorney.
Right. Exactly.
His agent, if he had a well-drafted power of attorney, then it's very likely that the power of attorney could, the attorney, in fact, could operate under the power of attorney to make the transfers.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Mark. Again, some advice could be sought there. If the person was already under care, though, is that going to be subject to that look-back period? That property? Interest in that property?
Well,
in other words, is this before the trust is established?
Well, the look back period is kind of a subject all to itself, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of first of all, what is the look back period? The look back period used to be for many years, and most of our listeners think of the look back period in terms of a 3-year look back period.
Mm-hmm.
That has been recently changed and has been slowly has become operative and is now a 5-year or a 60-month look back period.
Mm-hmm.
The look back period applies when an individual transfers basically the fee simple interest in their property to either a trust or to an individual. If we take our interest in our property and we have a fee simple interest, meaning a complete and total interest in the property, and we deed that away, then that is going to be subject to a 5-year look back period.
All right, we're going to have to stop right there for a second. We'll come back with a break and perhaps another caller here on Coastal Daybreak, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Our number 800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674. Welcome back to the program. Good to have you along with us here on Coastal Daybreak, and Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law.
Yeah, so Ben, we're talking about the look back period. And of course, I was saying that a transfer of a fee simple interest of a total interest in your property, or even a trust, is many times or is most times subject to a 5-year look back period. And this, of course, is a real pitfall. This is what most folks think to do.
Right.
They just want to transfer their property.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a deed prepared that, in fact, transfers their property to their son or daughter or grandchildren or whatever the case might be. And because they're transferring the property in its entirety, or, again, a fee simple interest, it then triggers this look-back period. In North Carolina, and of course, we need to keep in mind that these laws are the law that I am referring to is, in fact, a North Carolina law.
Right.
And
right.
does not necessarily always apply in another state.
Mm-hmm.
But in North Carolina, a transfer of a tenant's in common interest in property is not subject to the 5-year look back property.
Hmm.
So if the property, so in other words, if the planning is in place, and the proper advice is given, the devil is in the details here.
Right.
In the way in which this transfer is made. If it's made by first splitting the property into tenants in common interest, which is deed work.
Right.
And then there is a transfer to the trust or the children. Then, of course, it may not trigger the 5-year look back rule.
May not.
May not.
Yes.
Usually does not. And and in the question that the caller Mark had, he mentioned that his relative had a 25% interest in this property.
Oh, just as an example, he was just saying, yes.
Right. So that is, in fact, a tenants in common interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so this person's transfer of their 25% interest, since it's not a transfer of the whole, would not be subject to the 5-year look back rule.
Oh, okay. All right. So that could be some good news for them on that.
It could be good news. It needs to be transferred.
Right.
Because if it stays in his name, then it's very likely going to be subject to lien recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But the manner in which we protect it would be a bit more straightforward than if that relative owned 100% of the property.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense, and at some things that we'll have to be looking forward to as far as people seeking that advice. But every trust is not alike. I mean, that's one of the things that you talk about. You have to make sure that you're crafting it specifically for the right purpose, right?
That's right. You know, a lot of times folks will have already an existing trust. Maybe they've bought one of these kits from a seminar or something, and they will come in with an existing trust. They many times don't quite understand what they've bought, which is the disadvantage of getting these things without, you know, really having, you know, a lawyer that you can sit down with and communicate very openly with and have a real sense of understanding about what it is that you are planning.
Mm-hmm.
But they have these trusts, and then the comments are, well, I'd like for you now to use this trust to protect my property.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Ben, we most times are not able to do that because, as I've said so many times on the program, a trust, there are many different types of trust.
Right.
There are trusts for tax purposes.
Mm-hmm.
There are trusts for supplemental needs of handicapped and, mm-hmm. And mentally retarded persons, mentally handicapped folks. There are trusts for minor children or trusts for spendthrift children that are not minor,
right,
but that are adults.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many different types of trust, and we always have to look at the purpose for which we're creating it. And the trust that is used to protect property, an asset protection trust, is going to have provisions in it that apply to that objective.
All right. We'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal. Reminder, you can go online to harvellandcollins.com and find out lots of great information, including past shows. And you can call for the appointment at 252-726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. Joining us once again here on Let's Talk Legal, Cecil Harvell.
One of the, it's always interesting to know the reasons, Ben, or the purported reasons behind some of the laws and some of the rules, regulations, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, again, in the state of North Carolina, we have to begin by understanding that so much of our land in North Carolina is owned in farmland, timber land, and these lands are many times owned in tenants in common holdings between several members of the family, if
right.
you will.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of this, the Department of Medical Assistance in Raleigh, our government, it is difficult to place a lien. It is not impossible to do it, and it does happen, but it's more difficult to collect on a lien when, in fact, the property is held in a tenants in common posture.
Because you would have to force a sale off of it.
You would.
Yeah.
Just like, for instance, our caller Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean you still don't want the lien there. I mean,
right.
He doesn't want the lien against that 25% interest, and we need to avoid that.
Right.
But we have files in our office where the lien, where the planning was not perfected.
Right.
And the lien does in fact exist
mm-hmm.
against the 25%, if you will. And then unfortunately, it sits and sits and sits and sits that
mm-hmm.
land for years and years and years because there's an inability, of course, for the folks to come together and necessarily sell the land without paying the lien off.
Right.
But the state of North Carolina also is not going to take the time and effort to foreclose against just that 25% interest.
Hmm. Hmm. Now, in that kind of situation, I don't know if that's far-fetched, but could they partition decide which is that 25%?
Absolutely they could, and
yeah.
they probably would.
Mm-hmm.
If this property, you know, is extraordinarily valuable, and if the lien is quite large, then maybe the wheels would turn in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, usually those are the files that just kind of get left on the back burner as a result of just, you know, the nature of government
in general. Let's back up several years, mm-hmm. and again, taking kind of Mark's case there, the parents, could they have done some things and some planning that would have helped in that situation?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And many, many parents do.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many, many parents recognize that their child of an adult child. Of course, sometimes there, as I've said earlier, there are physical or mental mm-hmm. handicaps. Maybe there are addiction issues, or there have been, or maybe there are spendthrift issues. Maybe there are health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all of those circumstances are the very specific facts that a good lawyer would discern during the conference, and then potentially guide those parents or grandparents in making sure that that share of the property relative to that person
right.
would be placed in a trust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, there are some planning issues that obviously could have been handled there. So this is we go back to those kinds of instances because we always go back to saying planning ahead prevents a lot of headaches.
Absolutely, and the results also been in this area of the law can be so very positive.
Mm-hmm.
It is a minefield. It is very much an area of the law that people need guidance in. And there, we're going to talk about some of the logistics of this planning and also the implementation of this, the famous FL2, which is kind of a different angle,
mm-hmm.
In this area of the law next week. But we ought to talk some about that famous document, the FL2.
What does that stand for, FL2?
Well, the FL2 is a form that basically is signed by the physician
mm-hmm.
that dictates that the level of care of our loved one is at a level where they now need a skilled nursing facility
mm-hmm.
or an SNF, a skilled
okay.
nursing facility. And once this form is signed and it is in fact designated that that the level of care is at skilled nursing, then of course the wheels are in motion.
Yes, puts
now.
Other wheels into motion.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Again, we'll find about that more next week as well. Also, remind for you to tune in on Thursday morning at 8:30 for Andrew Foster from Harvell and Collins Sue to talk about taxes on life and taxes. We'll see you next week on Let's Talk Legal here, part of Coastal Daybreak on Tuesday morning, 252-726-9050.